see that far-right parties, anti-European parties, are strong in the polls in Germany. This is something where I think we have to be very careful not to paint a too idealistic picture of what the current EU is like. We have to bring in the countries which are waiting. Enlargement should not be something which is even in question, because the geopolitics, the geoeconomics mean that we have to bring these in. If we do not bring in Ukraine, it will not be safe, which has implications for all of us. If we do not bring in the Western Balkans, other countries will step in and will dominate politics there. So we have to do it, but what we have to do at the same time is also make the reforms necessary to make a union function with 30 plus members. And that's where we didn't see anything in the State of the Union. There was no realistic idea of how do we actually move from the union as it is now to the one which we need to have to address the challenges, including also bringing in the countries which are waiting to come in.
And is that a failure in terms of her vision, Ursula von der Leyen's vision, or is she just merely peddling the views of and the feelings and the stance of the EU leaders and the EU institutions, or is it a personal failure in terms of having the foresight on her part?
I would argue both. Yes, she is reflecting where the debate is on enlargement and reform, but it is also a question of her not putting forward a stronger vision, not putting forward concrete steps to say this is what we should be doing next. But clearly, the blame does not only lie with the Commission President or with the institutions. The key question here is how willing are our governments to do the policy changes which are necessary to address the fundamental challenges which we all have, but which are difficult and at times politically costly.
Fabian Zuleg, CEO of the European Policy Centre, thank you very much for your time today. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Good night to all of our listeners. You are tuning to Iran Radio, broadcast from Tehran. Today is Wednesday, and here are some interesting facts about Islam. During the Middle Ages, the Muslim world had numerous business advantages. They had a huge range of contacts, so they could trade everything from African gold to Chinese porcelain to European amber and furs. And Muslim craft workers were highly skilled, which meant their goods always found a real market. Without Muslim merchants, Europeans would have had no rice, sugar, or coffee. Approximately 5 to 8 million Muslims lived in the United States, and there are over 1,200 mosques. Muslims have been a part of the cultural landscape in America for the past 200 years. The Islamic Empire once stretched into modern-day Europe, particularly in Spain and the Balkans. Today, there are tens of millions of Muslims living in Europe. Now we'll listen to the continuation of our schedule on Iran Radio. We'll start off this hour's programs with the Spotlight, a daily program which covers the most important events happening in the world today. After that, we have Let's Recite the Quran. The program teaches eloquent recitation of the Holy Quran at level 2. A to Z of Life will be our final program this hour. The program presents an Islamic Iranian lifestyle in a variety of ways, making use of the ayahs of the Holy Quran as well as inspirational poetry and stories. Stay with us.
From Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of internet.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Now, the capital of Qatar, Doha, which was struck by Israeli missiles less than a week ago, is the scene of Arab and Muslim heads of states gathering today to respond in unison to the Zionist aggression. Well, at least that is the goal. But will it happen? Will these states unite and stop the terrorist acts of the Zionist regime in the region, and especially in Gaza? Or will it simply be more talk and no action?
Leaders from across the Arab and Islamic world have gathered in Doha for an emergency summit to issue a joint response to Israel's attack on the Qatari capital. Hosting the event, the Qatari emir set the tone, condemning the strike as a cowardly act of aggression aimed at derailing crucial mediation efforts to stop the genocide in Gaza.
Those who pursue efforts to assassinate the parties they're negotiating with, they are striving to thwart or make the negotiations fail. And when they say that the aim is to liberate the hostages, this means that these allegations are lies.
The sentiment was echoed by another official. The Arab League chief declared that silence in the face of such crimes is itself a crime and urged law-abiding nations to hunt down war criminals.
We urge all those who support the law to show solidarity to hunt down all of the war criminals.
The strongest language came from Iran's president, who called the attack on Doha an open and blatant warning to the entire region. Pezeshkian called for a unified Muslim front against the enemy.
All Muslims are brothers, and they should be standing at one united front together against the enemies.
And Lebanon's president, whose country faces daily Israeli aggressions, framed the attack as an act of terror designed to sabotage peace talks.
The goal behind the aggression wasn't an attempted assassination of negotiators, but to neutralize the idea of talks itself. For this reason, they chose the brotherly state of Qatar.
The leaders called for the Israeli regime to be held legally accountable for its actions and for existing UN resolutions on Gaza to finally be implemented. There were also strong calls for concrete economic pressure on Israel, a unified defense strategy to prevent future attacks, and an absolute rejection of any plan to displace Palestinians from Gaza. The message from Doha is unequivocal. Condemnation is unanimous, and the call for action is louder than ever. But the critical question remains, what practical steps would this united front actually take?
I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Reza Vedadi, academic researcher and author out of London. Said Moaz Shah, international law expert and geopolitical analyst out of Geneva. Thank you both for being with us. Let me start it off in Geneva with Said Moaz. Some political analysts are saying that due to the differences between the Persian Gulf states, actually just being able to convene this summit so quickly is in itself quite an achievement. I mean, how do you see it? Let's start from there.
Well, thank you so much for this important topic and raising it, that how quickly they were able to come together. It is surprising in certain respects and then not surprising. What really was surprising for me, to be honest, is how UAE was the first person to be there, along with Mohammed bin Ziyad and all the various other rulers of the Emirates. This was really surprising for me. There's been some interesting reading about what that means. But some people doubt the sincerity of that approach. But nonetheless, it did have an immediate impact. And I think a lot of them finally realize that this false sense of protection from America may not be true as it is. I mean, imagine Qatar was a country that just gave Trump $400 billion and bought all those Boeing planes. And there was a sense of security with the U.S. base there. Now, none of these things can actually make these Gulf countries feel secure. So all these Persian Gulf states have similar arrangements. Are they at risk as well? And it's the idea of survival. And if one goes, the other will also follow.
Okay.
And so this is the real reason, I think, that they were able to come and put together quickly. It was sort of a self-survival instinct.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I think Qatar has a lot of sympathies, particularly because of its stance on mediation and trying to bring both parties together. And to violate that sacredness is an ultimate, ultimate crime.
Okay. Well, Reza, let's talk about the importance of this summit and possibilities in your perspective.
I don't really see too many possibilities of retaliation against Israel. Most of these countries that have attended either have to have the capability or the will to try and retaliate against Israel. We saw that the final declaration was watered down. They were afraid to threaten retaliation because they know that Israel can strike them all. The only country there that has ever struck back against Israel has been Iran and Yemen. And Pakistan, a nuclear power, attended. But again, what is Pakistan going to do? Are they going to attack using American F-16 jets, which were they weren't allowed to use against India? So I think this is more of a show to demonstrate that we're unhappy about the status quo. But if you also bear in mind that the Qataris, the UAE, the Saudis, they have trillions, if not, you know, near trillion dollars worth of investment from their wealth in the United States. So there's not much they can go against the United States and Israel. If they do try to kind of change the outlook of everything, it's going to have to be very gradual towards a shift to maybe to a multipolar or towards a China side. But nothing immediately will happen at all.
Okay. Well, Said Maaz, these states want Israel to be held legally accountable for its war crimes and violations of international law. I mean, how likely is this to happen? And is there something that these participants of this summit could do to ensure that that would happen?
Well, you know, compliance with international law has been a question for the past 2.5 years, even beyond that, to be honest. But in the case of Palestine and Gaza, bombing hospitals, killing civilians, starvation, genocide. And, you know, this recent is just another raising the level. And Israel testing its mettle outside of the Gaza-Palestine situation and seeing how the world would react. I think it's a bit of ridiculousness. It's how far Israel is testing this is going to go. So to be honest with you, I don't see, I do understand the pessimism from my colleague there, and I do agree that this is a bunch of show. But the show is necessary. It is necessary because the politics of America are getting impacted by this. And I'll be honest with you, I mean, I hate to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but this Charlie Kirk assassination happening simultaneously nearly of this event, there are some mixed signals, and then Trump's response as to what he thought about this. And then apparently there's some breaking news coming out that the Americans were somewhat informed of this, even though the White House is denying it up and down, and they didn't know it was happening until it was happening. So there's a lot of gray area here, and I think it's going to put the United States in a very problematic position. I mean, Trump has been trying to rescue the economy in the United States, which is in shambles. I mean, he's been running on this oil money from basically all these Gulf countries. And if they can't have the simple security guarantees of the United States, then that. Even Netanyahu, to be honest, if you look at the latest reports, he even sent out a message that Israel is going into isolation and they have to prepare their economy accordingly. So this is, I think, the beginning of other serious rampant behavior from the Israelis. And it's just like a wild rabbit dog. And who it strikes next, we don't know. But what is the world's response? How long, how many more strikes are we going to take from this rabbit dog to act? This is a question I think is still a mystery to most of us. But more countries that will get impacted, I think the tide is eventually going to turn.
Mm. Well, Reza, I mean, this latest round of genocide on Gaza has been taking place for almost 2 years now, but it took an attack on Qatar by the Israelis to convene such a meeting by these countries. Why?
Well, Qatar has a lot of money. That's the basics of it, and it has connections, and it can utilize these connections to gather heads of state. I mean, if you look at it, when other have you seen the heads of state of all of these Muslim and Arab countries gather for any other events other than something that's scheduled as an annual or biannual meeting? The fact is that at the same time as they're having their meeting here, the foreign minister, Secretary of State Rubio, is attending Israel and showing support to the Israelis. And this idea about they told us, they didn't tell us, it's ridiculous for anyone to think that the United States had no idea that this was happening. For them to know that any other plane that, you know, takes off in any other part of the region, they know about. When Iran shoots missiles, they know about it. And yet they didn't know that these airplanes that need to be refueled by the Americans themselves or the UK Air Force are traveling to Qatar, bombing it, and then going back. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's part of a game that they're playing. I do believe that the United States knew about this and is utilizing it to pressure these other countries as well to force them to accept the Abraham Accords, as opposed to they didn't know about it and Israel was pushing it away. Whenever you see something like this, for us from outside, it seems absolutely illogical and unreasonable. But as time passes, you see it's part of the bigger plan of Israel trying to expand its influence by force. Because it's running out of time, it literally has not much time left. And many Israeli scholars and politicians have said that, you know, Israel is going to fall apart very soon as a country. They are trying their best to push these countries to accept either Israel as a legitimate state and have relations with it, or be afraid, and as whatever Israel dictates to it, they listen to. So I don't think this was, I think if you look at it in this perspective, you see the logic behind it.
So you feel that the United States that was part of this, was behind it, and is part of the Abraham Accords to try to get the these Arab regimes totally on board with it, correct?
I believe that Donald Trump knows that he's running out of time. The multipolar world is coming very quickly. So he's trying to force through situations and realities on the ground that benefit the United States. And Israel acts as his rabbit dog, as Ayatollah Khamenei said before. Israel acts as the force that it uses, and then it blames and tries to dissociate itself with. We saw that number of times. One of them was only a few months ago when they attacked Iran. Iran was literally negotiating with the United States. They attack Iran. At the beginning, they think that, you know, the attack is going to work, the regime is going to be changed, the country is going to fall apart. So Donald Trump says, yes, we knew about it. As soon as he realized that, no, the tide has turned and Israel is going to fail and it's going to lose, he's like, oh, we didn't know about it. You know, we're going to try and stop it. So this is Israel. Israel acts on behalf of the United States. It doesn't dictate to the United States.
Okay. Well, Said Moaz, you said in the beginning, talking about these Persian Gulf Arab nations, that do you think that they have realized that what happened to Qatar could happen to them, and that basically none of them are safe, as they thought that the United States would protect them? Having an American base in the country meant that no entity would dare attack them. Tell me, how do you think that this could affect the psyche of these regimes, and will it make a difference in their actions?
That's a good question. They definitely know that this cover, so-called false protection from the United States, is not there for sure. The question is, as my colleague mentioned very accurately and interestingly, today is the anniversary for the Abraham Accords. So isn't that a coincidence to have this incident happen, to have this summit happen, and for them to consider that this might be something? And let's be honest, if Bahrain and United Arab Emirates were so concerned about their brotherly Qatar nation, they would have at least sent back the Israeli ambassador, did some sort of objection on the diplomatic front, but they did not. They didn't even talk about it. And as it was very poised language, yes, there was condemnation, again, words. But my question is, and I kind of agree with my colleague, Reza, is that what are the expectations? Yes, you know the U.S. security is not there, so the only option is either you get with the Abraham Accords, which is something as an option, or you go the other route, which is taking a risk. Qatar, I think, is a country that may be willing to take a risk if it has reasonable grounds to do that. And I know there is economic pressure in the United States because it's like $1.4 trillion worth he's got from these Gulf countries that he has to actually do something. He has to say something. But I think the Israeli pressure on the United States, because you know how Mossad functions, we have a history of how Mossad has been functioning, Jeffrey Epstein and all these things. Trump got pulled into this as the Washington Post exposed that connection. There's connections there. I mean, this information is leaking out. That's why I keep saying Charlie Kirk. I believe there is reasonable presumptions that his incident is connected to what went on in Qatar. We don't know. Of course, investigation will keep coming out. As my colleague also mentioned, was the United States aware of it? Were certain members of the U.S. government aware of it? We could have pockets of different aspects within the U.S. government functioning. And so, you know, this is Israel is just out of control. And like I said, again, I'm referencing Netanyahu's own words, who recently just said that we are going into isolation and we need to prepare our economy accordingly. Why is Netanyahu saying this? Because Netanyahu is going to raise the bar and Netanyahu is going to do something outlandish once more again. And will the world remain silent? Will the Gulf countries remain silent? Definitely they know they can't rely on the U.S. security anymore. What are the other options? China coming together, the Muslim world. These are things that in time we will tell. For the time being, there is this statement. Qatar is saying that it will do some sort of reaction, retaliation. I don't know to what extent that they're claiming and that they've mentioned in some of their press conferences. But we hope to see something to send a message that this is a red line.
Okay.
And if you keep doing this, particularly to a state that is participating in mediation process, I mean, this is like, you know, the peacemaker. I could understand if Hamas was somewhere and that country was hosting them and there was an attack there. But we have a country that's trying to actually work on the hostages, to bring peace in Gaza, ceasefire, and that's the country that gets attacked. This is a serious breach in international norms, and the entire world needs to condemn it and take some serious action against Israel.
Right. Well, Reza, Moaz just talked about part of the final statement, and I want to look at parts of it that the Arab Islamic Summit, part of the final statement, says that the participants stand with Qatar in steps to respond to the attack. So what do you think this means when they're saying in steps to respond to the attack? What do you think that means? How do you think that the Qataris will respond? And do you think that we can actually see some type of coordinated action, perhaps military action even, against the Israeli regime by these countries?
No, I mean, it's been so watered down and so generic that any country can interpret it as it wishes. As my colleague rightly said, it's very easy for the United States, Bahrain, Jordan, Morocco, Egypt, these countries that have ambassadorial relations with Israel, to just tell them to recall their ambassadors and send this one back. They wouldn't even do that. Forget about disconnecting their relationship. They wouldn't send the ambassador back even just for a week, or recall this for a week. So nothing's going to happen. No military is going to take place. The only country that has ever, as I said, attacked was Iran. And Iran will not do anything on behalf of Qatar. It doesn't need to. If you remember about 7 years ago, when Qatar was surrounded and blockaded by the Saudis, Bahrainis, UAEs, and Egypt, the Emir of Kuwait himself has stated that Iran came to our aid, brought us medicine, food, water, that otherwise we would have not survived. However, if you go to the Qatar National Museum, there's no mention of any of this. They do mention a ship that came from Morocco with food. So the Qataris, unfortunately, nothing. They will not do anything militarily. They will not do things politically. They do this show. They will put the show on. Things will continue again, and they'll, you know, beg the United States to not allow any bombing to happen. Because if you think about it, if this continues where Qatar and these countries are attacked again, who would then allow another World Cup to take place in that part of the world? We're expecting the following World Cup of the United States to be in Saudi Arabia. It's going to destroy the whole security apparatus that they believe that United States provides for them. So I think they'll go begging to United States. They'll probably offer more money to invest in their countries for them not to be attacked. And they'll probably accept whatever Abraham Accord offer is put in front of them, unless the resistance wins and Israel collapses, as it's been predicted.
Well, said Moaz, Iran's president called for a united Muslim front against the Zionist enemy. How likely is that to take place?
we can just say inshallah. I mean, to be honest, unfortunately, the history since the OIC's foundation demonstrates that we haven't been able to even have a strong position on the issue of Palestine, let alone what's happened in Qatar. And beyond a one-pager statement that happens annually, there's nothing else that really action is to be found. I do see that maybe there might be a coalition of certain countries coming together who feel strongly about it to be able to do something. But again, that's it's a highly unlikely case scenario. I don't see any action. I do see high levels of condemnation. I do see pressure, maybe even embargo or some increased restrictions from the EU against Israel as a result of this. I'm not too sure. It's a far call out. But again, you know, attacking a country that's trying to bring about peace, this is a real concern in the international affairs. Any mediating state, any peace-building state to be able, then who's going to do the peace? And this is the thing that we have to understand, is that if the peacemaker themselves, or the ones who are attempting to make peace, are being threatened and attacked, then we will create a world that will generally go towards conflict, and we won't see peace until the dust settles. And so Israel, like I said, I expect more from them. This can guarantee you they're going to do something more. And they keep testing the red line. And to be honest, I think they really have America in their claws, and this is the sad reality. And if, unfortunately, as my colleague Raza is indicating, that they'll go to America, throw more money at that issue, you know, I don't see that as, it's sort of insanity, you know, throwing something more money at a situation knowing that the results are going to be the same. So the wild card here is possibly Russia and China, but I don't know if they want to get involved in an adventure that's not close to their borders. So this is going to be an interesting dynamic, how it plays out.
And on that note, I'd like to thank both of you for being with me on this spotlight. Reza Badawi, academic researcher and author out of London. Said Moaz Shah, international law expert and geopolitical analyst out of Geneva. And thank you for being with us on another spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Goodbye.
You'll be outcast. Sometimes it's better to be alone than to be with the bad crowd. Preserve your mind and feed it. What it is you.
let's recite the Quran. وَإِذَا قَرَأْتَ الْقُرْآنَ جَعَلْنَا بَيْنَكَ وَبَيْنَ الَّذِينَ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ بِالْآخِرَةِ حِجَابًا مَسْتُورًا.
الْقُرْآنُ نُورٌ وَبَيَانٌ. الْقُرْآنُ هَدْيُ الْإِيمَانِ. الْقُرْآنُ مِسْكُ الْخِتَامِ. يَا قُرْآنُ عَلَيْكَ سَلَامٌ.
أَعُوذُ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ. بِسْمِ اللَّهِ الرَّحْمَنِ الرَّحِيمِ. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners listening to IRB English Radio right now, welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem. Inshallah, today we gotta practice ayah 18, verse number 18, Surah Ar-Ra'd. Tell us what page?
251.
So brothers and sisters, let's get started. Turn to page 251. I hope you have the Quran with you. Page 251, Surah Ar-Ra'd, verse number 18. Is that right?
Yes.
So, ready everyone?
Yes.
Let's go.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. للذين استجابوا لربهم الحسنى والذين لم يستجيبوا له لو أن لهم ما في الأرض جميعا ومثله معه لافتدوا به. أولئك لهم سوء الحساب ومأواهم جهنم وبئس المهاد.
For those who have responded to their Lord is the best reward. But those who did not respond to him, if they had all that is in the earth entirely and the like of it with it, they would attempt to ransom themselves thereby. Those will have the worst account, and their refuge is hell, and wretched is the resting place.
Nice recitation, masha'Allah. Allah bless the reciter, insha'Allah. So, let's see what Allah Almighty says. First, like two, 3 points, if we could say, from this ayah, we could mention. Let's first and foremost see what Allah Almighty says in this ayah, like two, 3 points, if we could mention. But more information and the detailed explanation about this ayah, you have to refer to the Tafsir books, inshallah, and learn more. All right?
Yes.
So, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Verse number 18, Surah Ar-Ra'd, page 251. Allah Almighty says, لِلَّذِينَ اسْتَجَابُوا لِرَبِّهِمْ الْحُسْنَى. لِلَّذِينَ اسْتَجَابُوا لِرَبِّهِمْ. What?
Al-Husna.
It means Al-Husna is for لِلَّذِينَ اسْتَجَابُوا لِرَبِّهِمْ. Let's see what it means. Allah says, for those who answer the summons of their Lord, there shall be the best of rewards. What do you want? What do you want more than this? So if you answer Allah's summons, Allah invites you towards himself. It's for you, not for him. He doesn't need you. It's for you. So if Allah invites you towards himself just because of you, and if you answer, Allah rewards you. Come on. Can you find this anywhere else? No. Yes? Allah tells you, hey, you want heaven? Do this and that. Do this. This is the way to get to heaven. Okay? It's just because of you. So if you do what Allah Almighty recommends you, the instructions that Allah Almighty gives you, if you follow his instructions, he rewards you again. This is really mind-blowing, isn't it?
Yes.
That's it, guys. Remember that Allah Almighty tells us a lot of beautiful points in the Quran. Learn the Quran. Read the Quran. Love the Quran. Live by the Quran. Understood?
Yes.
Let's move on to the tajweed points. This is a long ayah. Let's see how many tajweed points we can mention here. Hussein, would you please recite it once? As he is reciting, okay? As he is reciting, we'll explain the tajweed points. Let's listen, everyone.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
Wait, and I gotta tell you that if you want to learn more and more about this, okay, you have to refer to the Tafsir books. Move on.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
أحسنتم.
للذين استجابوا لربهم الحسنى.
أحسنتم. للذين استجابوا لربهم الحسنى. للذين استجابوا. But you join them. للذين استجابوا. The Hamzatul Wasl is ignored, right? It's because we don't need it anymore. We no longer need it. Okay, move on. للذين استجابوا لربهم الحسنى. Wait. He made a pause here. Hassan, was he allowed to make a pause here?
Yes.
How?
Because we have a letter Jim on top of Husna.
Oh, that sign.
It allows us to make a pause.
Okay. That marks, that indicates that here you are allowed to make a pause.
Yes.
Hussein, mashallah. Did you know this?
Yes.
Good job. Move on. والذين. Wait. لربهم. Actually, it's ساكن. ميم is ساكن. لربهم. It's ساكن, okay? But الحسنى also starts with Hamzatul Wasl. Hamzatul Wasl is ساكن also, right? The letter لام there, الحسنى, it's also ساكن. But here,
the ميم has ضمة.
I know. In fact, it doesn't have ضمة. Wait, I'm going to tell you. There's a rule. It says the meeting of two ساكن letters. التقاء الساكنتين, meeting of two ساكن letters. That dhamma is because the word al-husna starts with hamzatul wasl, so you don't have any fatha kasra dhamma for that, okay? So if you wanted to assign this, you could read al-husna. But since you have the word lirabbihim and you want to join these two, so mim is sakin al-husna, lirabbihim al-husna. It's difficult.
Yes.
That's why you put a dhamma there based on the rules, okay? And you join it. لِرَبِّهِمُ الْحُسْنَى. Got it?
Yeah.
لِرَبِّهِمُ الْحُسْنَى. Move on.
وَالَّذِينَ لَمْ يَسْتَجِيبُوا لَهُ لَوْ أَنَّ لَهُمْ مَا فِي الْأَرْضِ جَمِيعًا وَمِثْلَهُ مَعَهُ لَفْتَدَوْا بِهِ.
أحسنتم. That's good, but reading longer with mistakes is not recommended. Reading shorter without mistakes is really recommended, okay? But if you want to read longer, you have to pay attention to some of the points. Look. وَالَّذِينَ لَمْ يَسْتَجِيبُوا لَهُ لَوْ أَنَّ نُون مُشَدَّة. Then, this was correct, okay? It was not your mistake. Your mistake was here. أَنَّ لَهُمْ مَا. You didn't extend the sound of meme there. أَنَّ لَهُمْ مَا. See, meme, noon, whenever noon and meme carry shadda, you have to extend the sound. And ghunna sound, nasal sound. Alright?
وَالَّذِينَ لَمْ يَسْتَجِيبُوا لَهُ لَوْ أَنَّ لَهُمْ مَا فِي الْأَرْضِ جَمِيعًا.
This way. Okay? ما في الأرض جميعا, but you join it to the wow. جميعا, جميع,
جميعا.
عو. This is called the rule. إدغام. قاعدة
الإدغام.
ومثله معه. Make sure those little wow that you have. مثله معه. Make sure you extend for two beats. لفتدوا. لإفتدوا it is, but you say لفتدوا. Skip Hamzatul Wasl. لَفْتَدَوْ بِهِ. That's it. Move on. أُولَٰئِكَ.
أُولَٰئِكَ لَهُمْ سُوءُ الْحِسَابِ وَمَأْوَاهُمْ جَهَنَّمْ.
Why did you extend the sound of مَأْوَاهُمْ جَهَنَّمْ? There's no reason for
جهنم.
That. وَمَأْوَاهُمْ جَهَنَّمْ.
Yes.
Repeat it. أولئك. Wait, the word ulaika, the mad is wajib, right? We have told you many times. So extend it for 5-6 counts. Lahum su, the mad is wajib.
Yes.
So ul hisabi wa ma awahum jahannam. Read it now. Wait. Sorry to interrupt. Hassan, tell us, what is that sila tells us? What does it indicate?
Sila says it's better to continue.
Wa ma awahum jahannam. It has a sila on the top. So it tells us better to continue, better to connect. So connect it to the next part and finish till the end of the ayah. Read. Ulaika till the end of the ayah.
Ulaika lahum su'ul hisabi wa ma'wahum jahannam wa bi'sal mihad.
Mihad. Echo the sound of dal when you stop. That. Good. I will recite this ayah, listen and repeat. Brothers and sisters, time to give it a go. Yes? Let's practice it.
Yes.
And that's the end of and that's the last part of our class. A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
للذين استجابوا لربهم الحسنى
للذين استجابوا لربهم الحسنى
والذين لم يستجيبوا له لو أن لهم ما في الأرض جميعا
والذين لم يستجيبوا له لو أن لهم ما في الأرض جميعا.
I can start from ومثله. I can continue from there, okay? But if I want to be more accurate, I gotta لو أن. That's a better place, okay? But ومثله. I will go from لو أن. That's better.
لو أن لهم ما في الأرض جميعا ومثله معه لافتدوا به. لو أن لهم ما في الأرض جميعا ومثله معه لافتدوا به.
أولئك لهم سوء الحساب ومأواهم جهنم وبئس المهاد.
أولئك لهم سوء الحساب ومأواهم جهنم وبئس المهاد.
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
Thank you so much, mashallah, to everyone. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, thank you so much for being with us till the end of this session. That's it from us for today. See you, inshallah, in the next session. Stay with Arabic English Radio every day. Inshallah, we'll be here with you. Hassan Hussein Ali Nasir and Masum, thank you so much for being with us. See you next time. That's it. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Sayyidina Muhammadin wa alihi al-Tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
Zikrun wa
bustle of life. Sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, respect for others. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, welcome to A to Z here on IRIB English Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And obviously respect for others is one of the fundamental things that we need to, to some extent, it would come almost automatically to us. And at the same time, I think it's a trait that maybe many of us still can actually train even more. And look, there's some very beautiful examples about this. So respect for others can actually also mean that we are sort of more open to others. And I'll try and explain this, because obviously it's one thing just sort of being respectful by, let's say, holding open the door, greeting people and saying thank you, these sorts of, let's say, things that are related also to courtesy. But there are higher levels to this. For example, one of the famous martyrs from Holy Defense, Dr. Mustafa Chamran. So it's said of him that, you know, he often came across people who maybe didn't share his viewpoints, maybe were coming from a very different direction, sort of politically, almost totally opposed to Dr. Mustafa Chamran's ideas. But look, Dr. Chamran would sort of take the positive from it, because for him it was really useful learning the viewpoints of others, because he could then, through dealing with people who are maybe very opposed and maybe almost, maybe even at times almost verbally aggressive towards them, very difficult to deal with, he could then in himself develop even more traits of sort of patience and respect for the others, in a sense. So this is a different way of looking at it. Welcome back to A to Z here on IRIB English Radio. And obviously I'm talking about this idea that when people are really difficult to deal with, it actually also helps us to sort of just be more patient, develop this idea of maybe even being more compassionate, being calm, and sort of also maybe just sort of focusing on maybe not even always the tone with what that they're using, but also just sort of honing in on, okay, well, what's the actual content of what they're saying? Is there something in there that's really really useful that, you know, we need to respond to? And we also, immediately also think back to the idea, it's one of the famous examples from Islamic history, obviously our Holy Prophet. And we know that even before the beginning of sort of wars, for example, the very famous Battle of the Trench, the Holy Prophet would typically consult with, you know, his companions as to, you know, what to do and the best strategy. And so obviously this also is just exemplifies this idea of listening to the others, hearing the different viewpoints. And obviously when the Holy Prophet realized, oh, this is a very good idea, obviously For example, Salman Farsi suggesting the idea to build the trench. And obviously, so listening to other people's viewpoints is very useful and sometimes brings us the sort of really good strategy for going ahead. And obviously, this is, and we see this in all the martyrs. So whether these are the martyrs of the holy defense or even martyrs of service, for example, of national service, for example, the former president of the Islamic Republic of Iran. So he too, it was very important for him to sort of hear different viewpoints. Even if his colleagues, if other officials had very different viewpoints, he would also take these on board. So I think these are qualities that we can maybe hone in ourselves as well, inshallah. So I pray that you've gained some benefit from today, and I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on Iron Bingo Radio, and farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
Good night to all of our listeners. You are tuned in to Iran Radio broadcast from Tehran. We start off this hour's programs with our news bulletin. After that, we have Around the World with reporters. Listen to fascinating reports from around the world as reporters tell us what is happening in their locality. Then it's time for Insights into the Holy Quran. The program presents a short exegesis or explanation of the ayahs of the Holy Quran. And we round up this hour's programs with leaders' speech, presenting an English translation of a selection of the statements and speeches by the honorable leader of the Islamic Revolution.
You raise your tired hands toward the sky, and the dark night lights up as you praise God. Your tears rain on your hijab and this cold air is filled with the fragrance of jasmine flower. Come and walk again in our troubled streets and lanes, and heal the scars of our city with your sense of heaven. Oh, Fatima. And you give him your necklace and the only food in your home. You talk to God until the rising of the sun, and you forget yourself while praying for everyone.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran reiterates that the recent agreement with the IAEA will become null and void in case of any hostile move, including the reinstatement of UNSC sanctions. Also in our headlines, a number of UN experts have condemned as extrajudicial execution the U.S. military strikes on Venezuelan vessels in the Caribbean. Hello and welcome, everybody. This is World News. Our top story, Israel's genocidal campaign continues in Gaza and causes more death and destruction, with the focus of the attacks now being on Gaza City. Over two dozen Palestinians have been killed since the early hours of this morning in one of the fresh bombardments. Seven people lost their lives and several others were injured in a strike on a residential building in Sheikh Rad 1 neighborhood, northwest of Gaza City. In Khan Yunis, three members of a family were killed in an Israeli shelling of a tent in the Al-Mawasi refugee camp. In Rafah, at least five people lost their lives, with over 60 others injured, where Israeli forces opened fire on aid seekers. Meanwhile, Israel has launched a temporary route for residents to leave Gaza City amid a wide-scale ground offensive. Since October 2023, the genocidal war on Gaza has killed over 64,900 people, more than 165,300 others